Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Because I think we need it. So good. It's just so good. That's one of those songs that, you know, you might not hear it for 20 years, and then when you do, you're like, oh, give me my lighter. I'm ready. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to be in the concert. Such a good song. Thank you for starting with that, John. Good morning. It's 5:11 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. We have big decisions yesterday. I know yesterday we spent a lot of time talking about Santa Rosa County because they had this huge meeting where they made all kinds of decisions and, you know, did things that really are going to affect the county potentially for a long, long time. And then yesterday they actually had their commission meeting that had been delayed because of, you know, they're calling it Snowmageddon. I had been favoring Snowpocalypse, but everybody else seems to be making the decision to go with Snowmageddon. I'm not sure I'm on board yet, but I think I'm losing this fight. So either way, you know what I'm talking about. So because of the snow event of 2025, winter storm, what was it? Ezod, what was the E? It was an E something. Do you remember what the E? It was some E name.
Enzo, something.
That's it. Enzo. Ferrari. I can remember because of Ferrari. So what? You know, which I'm definitely not calling it that. Anyway, so we had a big conversation yesterday at the Santa Rosa County Commission meeting. Not even really that big of a conversation, but about a pretty important topic.
I'm going to start out right now. We have two public hearings this morning. The first public hearing we have is impact fees.
Oh, boy, impact fees. So if you don't know the history, there were impact fees, and they were done away with as a result of the economic recession. And then they've been trying to put them back in, and the school board had put them in, and then they got sued. The county commission had put in contingent impact. Impact fee is when you build a house, you pay a fee, okay? Or when you build a building, or when you build an RV park for all, a bunch of things. You pay a fee to the county. It's supposed to go for a specific purpose. And in this case, it's for roads, okay, to increase road capacity. Because in Santa Rosa County, they think they don't have enough roads. They don't. Anyway, it had been put in as a contingency. Like, we'll do this if the voters approve the additional 0.5% sales tax, which the voters did not approve. Therefore, the impact fees did not go in. Well, you got a new board in there, mostly new board, which has, you know, been very much in favor of doing these kinds of things and creating additional funding sources, and impact fees were the one that they wanted to advocate for. So they're bringing forward the item. Now, the last time we tried this, it was a massive fight in the Santa Rosa County Commission. I mean, you had all kinds of people show up in red shirts from the Home Builders Association and adjacent industries who protested this, and they quashed it. That was a couple years ago. And then when they did it again last summer as the contingency, there was kind of a limp fight because, you know. And then yesterday, basically, there were two people who spoke. One guy named Alton Lister, who is with the Home Builders Association, and just said this is a bad idea. Also, we're in a great amount of instability right now because of the Trump tariffs.
Our president's putting tariffs all over the place, and the last time he did, he went on Canadian lumber. When he did that, it yanked everything through the roof, and we're strongly anticipating some of us builders have already ordered truckloads of studs and stockpiled them, because if this happens, we have houses bidded out. There's no way we can afford to double our lumber costs.
John, did you get told to show up? Because I didn't get told to show up.
No, I did not.
I mean, if they're trying to fulfill an order for truckloads of studs and they don't even come to us, I'm not sure if they're serious about this. Kidding. It's obviously a big deal for the home builders because, you know, the cost of lumber was a major. Now, the Canadian tariffs are on hold, just like the Mexican tariffs are on hold for 30 days because Mexico has promised to send 10,000 National Guard to the border to help with drug interdiction and illegal immigration. And so Trump said, okay, we'll give you a month and, you know, we'll see if that's enough to stave off the 25% tariffs. And similarly, in on the northern border, there's actually two different announcements made yesterday. One was on the southern border and one was on the northern border. Trump has basically said that, look, there's enough movement and agreement by the Canadian government that we don't have to engage in the 25% tariffs on everything except energy, which would have been a 10% tariff. So that didn't go into effect last night either. The Chinese tariffs did go into effect, apparently, unless I missed it. Unless something happened in between that I didn't see. But the border, the illicit drugs, criminals, traffickers, all that kind of stuff, he has determined that the government of Canada has taken immediate steps designed to alleviate the illegal migration and illicit drug crisis through cooperative actions. Further time is needed to assess. So that's where we're at. They're both on hold. But the point is a good one that, you know, this is an industry where if, you know, Trump puts a 25% tariff on Canadian lumber, and, you know, that's where you get your... well, not studs, but, you know, I mean, yeah, you get your, you know, your roof pieces or whatever. Well, you know, that's going to be a problem. Jennifer Mancini is also with the Home Builders Association, showed up yesterday.
We proudly support policies that promote new home ownership opportunities so that more Americans can achieve the dream of home ownership. Collectively, the members of the HBA cannot support any initiative that targets the building industry with overreaching regulatory requirements and burdensome fees that threaten our ability to build new homes for those who want and, more importantly, need them.
Yeah, and talking about the American dream is, I mean, appropriate because that is historically the dream is, you know, to have your own home and have your own car and have no debt. And one out of three is not bad for a lot of people. I mean, how many people own, let alone a house, their car? And I don't mean like they've entered into a payment program. I mean, they actually own it, like they don't owe anything on their car, right? So it's, you know, I mean, most Americans don't have any of those three things. But if they listen to Dave Ramsey or they practice good financial management, maybe you will. Anyway, back to the point is, look, the HBA wants people to buy homes because it's the American dream, but also because that's how they make their money. I mean, you know, like I want people to listen to the radio, you know, and if somebody came in and tried to regulate, make it harder for people to listen to the radio, I'd fight against it because that's my industry. So I understand where they're coming from. They don't want the government putting a tax on their product, which is, you know, $1,500 for a single family residence. It's actually $1,636. They don't want that because it makes the price higher, which makes it harder for people to buy. I mean, you know, it's not a lot higher given a $400,000 home. It's a pretty small slice of the overall price, but it's still something, right? And raising prices is raising prices. All right, so the county commissioners had their say about this. Chairman Kerry Smith, he was the one who brought this forward. But all of them were on board, okay?
Everything's pushed to the consumer. We understand that. But we have to have fair impact fees in place. We should have had them in place. It's been my argument. We should have never let them go. But we're in the pickles, and a lot of the pickles that we're in right now are because of not looking into the future.
Yeah, there's a lot of infrastructure needs in Santa Rosa County and not very much money to go around. And so, you know, they're behind, way behind, like a decade behind, maybe at least 5 years behind on doing the things they should have done.
Believe me, let me go back on this real quick because we've got a lot of people that think this is the magic bullet. This is going to cure all of our woes. It's not. It's a drop in the bucket. It's literally a drop in the bucket. But it's a good drop. So let's start moving forward to being innovative in our means of collecting the funds that we need to get these things done.
And yeah, I mean, $1,500 is really not that much, either for the consumer or for the county. It's just a small amount of money for, I mean, even if you had, you know, even if you had 1,000 homes paying it, you're talking about $1.6 million. How much road can you build for $1.6 million? I mean, not much. You know, to put it in perspective, that turning that little pig trail to River Birch Road into a real road is a $5 to $6 million project. You cannot do a lot with a, you know, even 1,000 homes, $1.6 million. So it's just, it's not a big funding source. He's right. Now he it's not literal. It's not figured. It's not literally a drop in the bucket. It's figuratively a drop in the bucket. But I'm quibbling now about language. It doesn't really matter. Bobby Burkett, new county commissioner for District 1, replacing Sam Parker.
I am also for impact fees, reasonable impact fees. We kicked this can down the road for infrastructure for 35, 40 years. We cannot keep kicking it down the road. We have got to take a stand, be the bad guy. If it has to be, then okay, so be it. But we've got to have impact fees to help get started on our infrastructure. You're correct. It's just a drop in the bucket. But we got to start somewhere.
Can I just raise a point of English? Kicking the can down the road, I don't think is a great metaphor. Because when I think of kicking a can down the road, I think of having fun. Oh, woohoo! Or playing kick the can as a kid. And is it like my responsibility to pick the can up now and therefore when I'm kicking it, I'm... But if you kick it, you chase it. You don't like kick it and then hope your neighbor picks it up, right? I don't know. It's a weird metaphor. It's a metaphor they use a lot. It's fine. It's deferring your responsibility. It's not doing your job. It's whatever. I'm a language weirdo. I know I am.
I've heard people say, well, it's going to keep my kid from buying a house. You take a reasonable impact fee over a 30-year, you're looking at $3 to $4 a month. If $3 or $4 a month is going to stop you from buying a house, you're trying to buy too much house. I'm sorry, I'm just going to be point blank.
And he's not wrong. I mean, if $3 is going to break the bank, you probably shouldn't be in that position to begin with. For just the price of a Starbucks coffee. Oh, wait, sorry. For just the price of 1/3 of a Starbucks coffee. No, aren't they like, that's like $7 or $8, right? Is a pretty normal price for a Starbucks for half the price per month anyway. But, you know, a cost is a cost. And in an environment where we're already paying too much for everything, it feels like, well, this is just one more thing. Well, you know, again, in the grand scheme of a mortgage, $4 or $3 is really not that big of a deal. It's not like you want to add price to it, but are you going to not buy that house because the house is $1,500 more? I mean, come on. You know, if you want the house, that price is not going to keep you from it. Ray Addington, Commissioner Ray Addington, that's Navarre area, District 4.
It's better to have this if we want to get stuff fixed, because I kept saying we, in the past, we've kicked the can down the road.
Stop it.
And not fixing stuff. Now it's time to fix this stuff, and this is a start. We got to get everybody on board, and it ain't much. It's not much. If I'd buy me a new house today, I wouldn't have a problem with it. This is where I want to live. I'd buy it, no matter what. And I'm on board with this. I think it's the right way to go.
We got to pick up that can, not kick that can. That's going to be the goal going forward. So they had a vote.
We have a motion. We have a proper second. We'll ask all in favor to vote with an aye and raise your right hand. Aye. Looks unanimous. We now have impact fees. They'll be in 90 days, right?
There you go. And these are the same ones they had voted to put in place on contingency if they passed the local option sales tax last year. That did not happen, so they were not in place. Now, 90 days, boom's it. There you go. So here's how it works. Single family detached dwelling unit, a home. Okay, typical house, what you think of, $1,600. Multifamily low rise. I don't know what the break point is on that, whether it's three stories or two or four, but it's about $1,200. Multifamily high rise is $800 a piece. The theory there being that if the footprint goes up, that's less stormwater costs, which this is not related to, but it's also a little bit less road issues because you're having people living in a little bit more dense area. So it just costs a little bit. I mean, it doesn't take, it's the same amount of roads to get them there, but it's a little bit less. I don't know. Anyway, the idea is to incentivize multifamily high rise. Mobile home park and RV parks are $1,200. And then you have all the other ones are based on square footage. Retail is almost $3,000 per 1,000 square foot. It's almost $3 a square foot. That's actually really high, in my opinion. New retail commercial, adding $3 a square foot is a lot. That's a big one. Office space is $1,400 per 1,000, so it's a buck and a half. Industrial is 70 cents a square foot. Warehouse is 30 cents a square foot. Mini warehouse is 30 cents. And then public or institutional buildings are going to be 70 cents a square foot. So here's the one thing I will say about this. I have several things, actually. I lied. One is I'm glad they're not doing it on the base of ad valorem. It's not on the basis of bigger or smaller houses. That never made sense to me. Ad valorem generally doesn't make sense to me because usually it's not that people who have a nicer home consume the service more. It's just that they happen to have money, and so we tax them higher. You know, and people who, you know, you can have five cars in an RV or in a mobile home just as much as you can have five cars in, you know, a $1 million home. So I'm glad that it's not based on property value. That had been one of the early conversations, that is banking it ad valorem. A second, it's not that big of an amount of money either way. That means, A, it doesn't cost that much, but it also doesn't pay that much. So it's not going to do that much to alleviate traffic problems. This is for roads. That's what it's for. It's for roads. Will it dramatically change the market? No. $400,000 home, it's going to cost $1,600 more. And generally, I don't know that impact fees are really all that fair. They can be a lot higher. I mean, some places pay like $15,000 or $20,000 in impact fees for a new home. It's a weird thing because it is such a small amount of money, which makes it not so bad, but it also makes it not so helpful. And you're adding this small payment on top of these homes to, you know, I don't know, make up for theoretically the additional traffic volume that a new house creates. But everybody participates in this. A lot of times new homes are built by people who live here already, so they're already paying. There's a lot of things about this conversation that I think are weird. But again, that's done. It's in place. 90 days, it actually goes into effect. So you've got places that were, you know, going to build 200 homes, and now they're going to have to figure out a way to come up with another, you know, $320,000 for that project. So they're basically losing the price of a house, the retail price of a house in building this, which is, again, not that big, but not that small. 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I learned about atrial fibrillation the hard way. My symptoms would come and go, shortness of breath, fatigue. I kept going. Then I got so lightheaded, I couldn't. My doctor said I have AFib, so I'm about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. Other symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, can come and go, but the risk of stroke stays. If you have symptoms, tell a doctor. Visit notimetowait.com.
Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas Oyster House, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters tomorrow at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. They'll be discussing Black History Month, dinner with an aria, the new semester of the Atlas Beverage Class, Pensacon at the Fish House, and Naples to Napa food and wine event tomorrow at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Ugh, I've just been feeling so sluggish lately.
You should try the Metamucil 2-Week Challenge.
The Metamucil 2-Week Challenge?
Yeah, Metamucil 4-in-1 Fiber helps trap and remove the waste that weighs you down. Start your daily routine now, and in 2 weeks, you could be feeling great. Well, it's been 2 weeks. How you feeling?
Lighter and feeling great.
If you want to feel lighter by promoting digestive health, sign up to take the 2-Week Challenge at Metamucil.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Sundays, you get Christian Outlook at 7, Ask the Preacher at 8, Town Hall Review, Fox News Sundays a Weekend, Tech It Out, and Gun Talk at 8.
Give him your wallet.
What for?
He's got a knife.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
Apparently today it's all lighter music. That's what we're doing. It's all, no, I don't mean lighter as in, you know, not heavy. I mean, it's all music that you can listen to with a lighter in the air. Speedwagon there, Starship before. You know what? I'm always fascinated by quotes that we get close but not quite right. You know, like, no, I am your father, Luke. Well, it's not quite right. But in this one, you know, I always heard in my head, Crocodile Dundee is, now that's a knife. He doesn't say now. He just says, that's a knife. I mean, it's a little thing, but, you know.
I thought it was always this.
This is a, yeah, I heard you say it wrong while it was happening. It cracked me up. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John Pickens is who I was talking to. David Wayne has got news in the newsroom, so let's do it properly.
News early, on the eights?
Early in the morning, not enough caffeine, man. Go on.
Well, crews have removed the fuselage from the Potomac River near the nation's capital after last week's midair collision. The equipment was moved into place in the river over the weekend. They spent several days surveying the site. So far, they say 55 of the victims of that crash have been found. China is now putting some tariffs on U.S. products. That in retaliation, of course, for the tariffs President Trump enacted on on them. Beijing said overnight they'll be charging extra tariffs of 15% on coal and liquefied natural gas and 10% on crude oil, farm equipment, and some cars starting next week. And El Salvador says it will be housing violent U.S. criminals and take in deportees of any nationality. This is a deal negotiated by Secretary of State Marco Rubio. He announced the deal after meeting with El Salvador's president on Monday, calling it an act of extraordinary friendship. El Salvador will be taking in, of course, Salvadorians that entered the U.S. illegally, but also any criminal illegal migrant of any nationality.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Yeah, it's kind of interesting the, you know, the way this thing is kind of being played around with in social media is like Trump backed down and therefore we don't have tariffs. I don't know. I view it as Trump got a concession from the Mexicans, and so tariffs are on pause for a month. And Trump got concessions from the Canadians, so tariffs are on pause for a month. With the Chinese, yeah, you know, tariffs went into place, and they put in retaliatory tariffs, so we'll see what that means. But, you know, Trump made a threat, got something for it, and in the end, we didn't have to do anything different than what we're already doing except talk about it. That feels like a win to me. I mean, you apply pressure, you create leverage, you get a result that cost you nothing. Here we are. Again, seems like a win to me.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. New tariffs on Canadian and Mexican imports are on hold. New tariffs on Chinese imports are in effect today, and China announces a plan for retaliation.
These new tariffs are due to come into force next Monday. 15% on American coal and liquefied natural gas, 10% on crude oil, agricultural machinery, and large-engined cars. The Chinese finance ministry saying the American tariff seriously violates the rules of the World Trade Organization.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says El Salvador's president's offering to accept deported convicted criminals of any nationality from the United States.
He has offered to house in his jails dangerous American criminals.
President Nayib Bukele says there'd be a small fee to take them in. There'd be legal challenges to sending American criminal citizens or legal residents to another country. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 55 degrees. It is cloudy and a little bit foggy out there yet this morning. A man has been arrested after a standoff with an Escambia County SWAT team yesterday, 54-year-old Joran Dworshak. He was wanted on felony charges for failure to appear. The sheriff's office says they tried to serve an arrest warrant at a home on Softly Pines Road. Deputies say Dworshak would not comply, so the SWAT team breached the home and took him into custody. And investigators also say there was a woman at that home that was being held against her will. So Dworshak faces additional charges for that. The Pensacola Habitat for Humanity has opened up its Northwest Florida Community Land Trust homeowner application process. Habitat officials say homeowners in the CLT can own the house, but they would not own the land that the house is on. To be eligible, applicants would have to have a credit score of 640, minimum income of $35,000 in Escambia County or $30,000 in Santa Rosa County. There are CLT homes available in Milton, Gulf Breeze, Ensley, and in West Pensacola. Well, getting some reaction yesterday to Governor DeSantis' criticism of the recent immigration bill passed by Florida's Republican lawmakers. District 2 State Representative Alex Andrade tells News Radio he believes it all comes down to ego.
Governor DeSantis is in his final 2 years as governor. He's trying to hold on to like some semblance of, it comes off more aggressive than it should, but like relevancy. And so he's doing this kind of trip around the state on taxpayer dime, by the way, bringing state agency heads with him all across the state, creating this fake narrative to justify vetoing a bill that would be the strongest immigration bill in the country if he signed it.
And Andrade says giving more control of immigration to the Commissioner of Agriculture just makes sense because they're an elected official. Right now, the only cabinet member available is the Attorney General, who's been sworn into the Senate. The state CFO is soon to be our District 1 congressman. Andrade says Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson is also a friend of President Trump and is looking to run for governor, so would be incentivized to follow the president's agenda. Well, learning a little bit more about that incident, apparently caught on video in Milton involving a Santa Rosa County deputy and an unidentified 20-year-old resident, Chief Deputy Randy Tift says that it all started when the deputy saw a man in the middle of the road and tried to make contact.
He ignored him. He got out of his car, yelled at him, that identified himself as a sheriff deputy. He continued walking to the house, went in the house, and closed the door. When the deputy knocked on the door, he asked him to come out so he could discuss it with him, refused orders from the deputy, and we kind of went from there.
And Tift says that incident is currently being internally investigated by the sheriff's office. Because of that, they can't release body cam video of the incident at this time. Well, the grace period is over for Pensacola's red light cameras. On Saturday, Pensacola police began issuing fines for traffic light violations at those red light cameras. The fine for running a red light camera is $158. The number of violations caught city leaders by surprise right after those cameras were installed. PPD captured over 1,200 violations in the first 30 days. Of course, for 30 days, all drivers were given warnings. But now, as of last Saturday, fines are being issued. It's 5:35. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather.
We do have a dense fog advisory through the morning hours. Dense fog going to be possible through the late morning. High today near 72 degrees with partly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 58. Fog possible Wednesday morning as well with a high near 72 in the afternoon. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 61. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And thank you very much, Brooke. Right now, it is 55 degrees in Pensacola, 54 in Gulf Breeze, 49 in Milton. Our next news at 6. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. President Trump has agreed to a 30-day pause on his 25% tariff threats against Mexico and Canada. In both cases, the pauses came after both countries agreed to send their troops to the U.S. border to prevent the trafficking of fentanyl and illegal immigrants. U.S. Steel and Nippon Steel have laid out their case that then-President Biden hamstrung a national security review to justify blocking the company's merger. The companies claim that they had their due process rights violated when Biden pledged in March to block the Japanese steelmaker's proposed $14.9 billion takeover of U.S. Steel. China said it will launch an investigation into Google over alleged antitrust violations. The country's State Administration for Market Regulation said that it would initiate an investigation into the technology giant because of alleged violations of China's anti-monopoly laws. Futures are slightly lower. Monday, the Dow Industrials lost 122. That's Your Money Now.
Are you feeling tired, slower, or achier than you used to? You might think it's just age, but it could be low testosterone. At Wave Men's Health, they've helped thousands of men who didn't realize their symptoms were caused by declining testosterone levels, a problem that's becoming a new norm in American men. Wave Men's Health refuses to accept this new normal. They're committed to restoring testosterone to healthy levels so you can feel like yourself again, whether at home, in the gym, at work, or in the bedroom. For years, their providers have delivered testosterone therapy tailored to each man's needs. No one-size-fits-all solutions, just real science-backed results delivered by discreet local experts. Imagine more energy, sharper focus, and newfound confidence. A same-day testosterone check and consultation is just $99. Call 850-266-7020 or visit WaveMensHealth.com today. Your prime years aren't over. They're just waiting to be unleashed. Wave Men's Health. Making it happen.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in Thursday at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Friday night, enjoy the Pensacola Symphony's Mozart Madness at the First Baptist Church of Pensacola. For tickets and more info, please see PensacolaSymphony.org. The 12th annual Kids and Critters Parade will take place Saturday in the Casino Beach parking lot across from Sidelines. It's the kids' chance to enjoy some Mardi Gras fun. See visitpensacola.com for more. Find more events and submit yours at newsradio923.com.
Are you hungry for news that keeps you informed, is local and dependable? Look no further than News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and on AM 1620. We're your trusted source for all the latest happenings in the Emerald Coast. From breaking news to in-depth reports, we've got you covered. Our team of experienced journalists brings you the stories that matter most to our community. Stay connected with local events, weather updates, and traffic reports, ensuring you're always one step ahead. We're News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
I am a nightmare walking.
They thought that they could do some window dressing and then just kind of leave, and that you guys would all just accept that, even though the policy was terrible and they weren't getting the job done. Our voters are smarter than that. They thought if they put Trump's name on a weak bill, that people would just say, oh, it must be good just because Trump's popular. People have seen through that. They did things that are going to make it worse to combat illegal immigration than we're even doing now. If that bill passed, we would have been more effective under even Biden in some respects than now, when we have a willing partner in Donald Trump, because they're trying to kneecap state enforcement efforts.
So I see we're bringing the rhetoric down a lot in the fight between Governor DeSantis and the state legislature. So that was at a press conference on Friday, and yesterday had a really good conversation between the audio from Governor DeSantis on the one hand and the responses by State Representative Alex Andrade, District 2 Representative on the other hand. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew, and welcome to the Twilight Zone.
It's super weird times. I know the governor has been heavy-handed for several years, but the legislature has gone along. It's been a pretty smoothly running operation for the most part. And all of a sudden, it's like, you know, we're off the rails, down the embankment, rolled over and into a ditch trying to figure out what to do here. What I kind of want to do is I just want to play some of the governor and then have you respond. But I'll give you the first, like, 30-second overview. What in the is happening right now? Why is this happening?
I think so ultimately, I think it really does come down to ego. I mean, Governor DeSantis is in his final 2 years as governor. He's trying to hold on to like some semblance of, and it comes off more aggressive than it should, but like relevancy. And so he's doing this kind of trip around the state on taxpayer dime, by the way, bringing state agency heads with him all across the state, creating this fake narrative to justify vetoing a bill that would be the strongest immigration bill in the country if he signed it. It's a bill that we've worked on with the Trump administration. So he's trying to create the circumstance that allows him politically to veto this bill for improper purposes, when he knows just as well as anybody that this would make Florida an even stronger and the strongest state in the country enforcing illegal immigration.
Watching social media, I see a lot of angry Republicans who are angry at, I think, you guys. They're taking the governor's side. I don't see a lot of people who are angry at the governor and taking your side. But, of course, you know, it's always a question of how well-informed are people or not. And that's kind of why I wanted to have you on today, because he's had his say a lot. And I have tried to represent both sides on this a little bit, but here we go. So first thing he says, the state of emergency has been crucial to enforcement, and you guys get rid of that.
So the bill the legislature sent me, it actually terminates the state of emergency that's unlocked our ability to do all the things we're currently doing. They want to shut it, just as Donald Trump declared a national emergency at the border, they want to shut down Florida's declaration to say this is an important issue. And basically end all the things these guys have been doing, and they're working very constructively. Now, if you were serious about ending illegal immigration, why the hell would you stop the things we're doing that's been effective? But that's what they wanted to do, terminate. That's in the bill.
Alex Andrade, your response?
We create a chief immigration officer, an elected official, who has the power to declare a state of emergency based on immigration. So what the governor is trying to say is somehow he's going to lose the power to declare a state of emergency on immigration. The governor puts immigration enforcement in the hands of an unelected bureaucrat. What this bill does is put immigration enforcement in the hands of an elected official, someone who answers directly to the voters. In this circumstance, it's the Commissioner of Agriculture. The Commissioner of Agriculture, Wilton Simpson, is very close with President Donald Trump. Wilton Simpson, it's no secret, wants to run for governor in 2 years and is hoping for the Trump endorsement and is incredibly close with the president. If DeSantis is really the thing, really thinks that we're going to do anything, or the ag commissioner is going to do anything against Trump, he's one, lying to voters, and two, no, it doesn't do away with the current state of emergency. It just says that the person in charge of declaring states of emergency for immigration issues is the chief immigration officer of the state.
Okay, so especially considering the future with political goals in mind, and Wilton Simpson was one of the handful of people that threw an after party at the RNC, which is usually I'm trying to be governor party, and you know, so that I can confirm from experience that there's something to that. But let's take this as I think probably the biggest objection to this the legislative bill raised by DeSantis, and in most people's minds is this one.
They eliminated any immigration enforcement from the governor and our state agencies, and really local in many respects, and they lodged it in the Commissioner of Agriculture.
And you hear some vague booing, Wilton Simpson.
First of all, has that ever been done anywhere in the United States? How often is agriculture viewed as leading the fight against illegal immigration? I don't think I've seen that memo yet.
So agriculture hires workers, migrant workers. The agriculture lobby doesn't love, you know, harsh penalties for illegal immigration. Wilton Simpson, as the, you know, agriculture chief, you're putting him in charge. And as DeSantis says, that's putting the fox in charge of the henhouse, which, of course, I'm sure is a jab at him being a chicken farmer. But OK, your answer, because this has probably been the biggest one that I think people are having questions about.
Here's the funniest thing is, you know, which industries hire more illegal immigrants than ag? Restaurants, hotels, and construction. And you know who regulates those? The Department of Commerce and Department of Business and Professional Regulation, two agencies whose bureaucrat heads are appointed by the governor. You know who the governor put in charge of enforcement of E-Verify? Those agency heads. The governor's whole argument is he should be allowed to hand choose an unelected bureaucrat to be in charge of this, and that's not the fox guarding the hen house. But somehow an elected official who goes up on the ballot every few years is somehow the fox guard in the henhouse. The patently ridiculous argument, especially when you realize that the governor's record on E-Verify is miserable. We gave the governor the authority to enforce E-Verify on businesses 4 years ago, and he has sent zero enforcement letters in 4 years. And the whole reason why is he put it in charge. He put the responsibility of enforcement of E-Verify at the Department of Commerce, and they've literally done nothing with it. So the governor's record on enforcement is terrible. His record as an administrator, when you look back on the governor's legacy, it's going to be a lot of, you know, bill signing celebrations. You know, he's signing laws that we passed, the legislature passed. It's not going to be his record on administration. And E-Verify is one perfect example of that.
The governor says that you're going to create a new bureaucracy and you're going to have to get permission from ICE before you do, or sorry, permission from the Agriculture Commission before you do any communication with ICE.
If they're working to bust like some illegal alien gang, they wouldn't be able to turn them over to ICE unless the Commissioner of Agriculture gave them approval. Who the hell do they think they are to say they need a mother may I from the Commissioner of freaking Agriculture?
Your response?
I don't know what bill he's looking at or reading, but it's not a bill that's in existence. Literally nothing that he just said in that clip is true. Our local law enforcement departments, our local sheriff's offices across the state already coordinating with ICE and Department of Homeland Security on a daily basis. All the bill says is that the chief immigration officer has to, you know, make sure that all the 287G contracts that are executed between sheriff's departments and state agencies and ICE have to go through their department so that the contracts across the state are all cohesive and they're not missing anything. It's a paperwork function. It's not an operation function, and it stops zero operational activity on day one. What's kind of sickening is that Governor DeSantis knows this, and yet he's lying to the public anyway. We're putting $500 million in state funds towards illegal immigration enforcement. $500 million. Someone has to administer that money. Someone has to administer those contracts. We decided to designate an elected official, a specific elected official, as the chief immigration officer. And we happen to only have the ag commissioner. He's the only cabinet member in existence right now, because our CFO just is about to be our congressman, and our attorney general just got sworn into the Senate. He made the perfect sense right now, at this point in time, to go help President Trump. And by the way, our ag commissioner and President Trump are friends. DeSantis is—it's made up. It's the most bizarre thing, Andrew. I've never seen anything like it.
Can you answer one other? I thought you had answered, but somebody texted me and said that you had not. I think people aren't aware, and this is a good point to emphasize. Why put law enforcement powers within the Department of Agriculture? That doesn't seem to make much sense. But there's a fact in this that is actually pretty straightforward. What is it?
Well, one, law enforcement powers are in the executive branch, period. The Ag Commissioner already has law enforcement boots on the ground. 200 sworn law enforcement officers the Ag Commissioner already enforces. He's an elected official, and he's operating contracts. The chief immigration officer is not standing up a whole new mini ICE. I think that's the big thing that people are misconstruing. We're not creating new law enforcement departments by this. We're not creating new employees to like start whole investigatory units and kind of like mimic or shadow ICE. And the big difference conceptually between our bill and the governor's is we're not trying to create some minor league B team version of ICE. That's what Governor DeSantis wanted to do. He wanted to create like the minor league version of ICE. What our bill does is say we're going to go empower sheriffs, existing law enforcement agencies. We're going to put $500 million to fund it, and we're going to help them work with ICE and Department of Homeland Security. I have a great example of why that distinction is important, but I can talk about it later in the interview, Andrew.
Fair. Well, we are almost out of time, and I hate that to be the case because this has become so frustrating to me to watch, because it's elected officials who I respect and admire on both sides. And to see you guys squabbling so heavily with each other over something that basically seems like to me should be easy is frustrating. So what's the outcome here? What do you think happens now? The governor hasn't signed the bill or hasn't vetoed the bill, which you guys named the Trump Act, or your leadership named the Trump Act. Have you guys sent it to him? Oh, you know what? I did have one other quick. Are you guys being threatened that if you don't play ball on this, that you won't get funding or chairmanships? Because that's been another allegation that's been made.
No, no one's threatened me for anything.
Okay.
Here's the whole thing. When Trump sent a plane full of illegal immigrants, supported them back to Colombia, and Colombia used to accept them, Trump, because he's the president, could threaten tariffs, and Colombia had to accept them. They sent the Colombian version of Air Force One to go pick them up. DeSantis wanted this weird magical power to be able to fly illegal immigrants to countries, and he asked for a limitation on liability. Literally, he wanted to be exempt from civil liability, but he also wanted to have money and the ability to fly illegal immigrants to foreign countries on his own. When that foreign country refused Ron DeSantis, he's a governor. He doesn't have the ability to tariff. You know what's going to happen? Our state-funded plane is going to be sent home with its tail between its legs, and it's going to create embarrassment. Ultimately, with a lot of this stuff, we're trying to save the governor the embarrassment of circumstances like that. He seems to think we're still a state working under the Biden administration, and he doesn't seem to realize that Trump is in the president's office now. We have to go work with Trump. We don't have to set up our own separate wannabe federal departments. We just have to go help the president do what the president said he was going to do. That's what our bill does, and that's what Governor DeSantis doesn't seem to understand.
So what's going to happen now? Is he going to veto it? Is he going to sign it? I mean, and then if he does veto it, then what?
I think what the governor is terrified of is President Trump weighing in. Because I think the governor knows that if President Trump weighs in, he's going to tell DeSantis to sign it. So I think right now what the governor is trying to do is create political cover by lying about us, like using taxpayer dollars, going this taxpayer-funded tour around the state, lying about us in this bill to try and create enough political cover to still veto it. But, I mean, there's a chance President Trump weighs in, and I think if President Trump weighs in, he's going to say, great bill, why isn't Ron signing it? And if that happens, I think Ron's going to have a difficult couple weeks.
So it might well be that Trump is letting him basically extend the rope until the point where he's going to say sign the bill, and then he's going to have to, or else. Wow,
I've seen President Trump do more brilliant things, but this would be at this point a pretty funny one if that's what President Trump did.
Well, and you know, honestly, out of everything you said, aside from the sort of fact explanation, the business about Wilton Simpson wanting to be governor. And doing that in 2 years in the middle of the Trump term, meaning that he has to have Trump's support for this, meaning that he wouldn't dare do something contrary to it. That's a very, you know, sort of from a motivational point of view, that catches my attention. Alex Andrade is our state representative for District 2. Alex, as always, thank you for being so available and always, you know, having useful things to contribute to the conversation. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services, advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
I changed him, fed him, walked him around, and he's still crying. Now I'm panicking. What should I do?
It's okay. We're glad you called. We learned during the Period of Purple Crying program that babies tend to cry a lot in the first few months of life.
If nothing is working and you need a break, put the baby in a safe place and take a few minutes to walk away and calm down.
During the Period of Purple Crying, it is crucial to stay calm and never shake a baby. To learn more, visit PreventChildAbuseFL.org.
This message is sponsored by the Ounce of Prevention Fund of Florida, the State of Florida, Department of Health, and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Ladies, do you want to feel more connected to our community? Consider joining Impact 100 Pensacola Bay Area, a women's philanthropic group that has awarded 165 grants totaling more than $17 million in our community. Connect with other women and increase your area impact. Membership deadline is March 1st. For details, check us out on Facebook or visit Impact100Pensacola.org.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknight 7 to 10 before WEAR TV News on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Happy Hunger Games, and may the odds be ever in your favor.
Okay, can I be honest? I was listening to that PSA, and at first I thought it was Purple Crime, and I thought, what is Purple Crime?
Right.
And then I thought, oh, Purple Crying for kids. And then I'm like, Purple Crying? What is that? Is that just when kids cry so hard they can't breathe and their face turns purple? You know, which doesn't really happen that much. I mean, you know, if a kid cries too much and he can't breathe, they just pass out and keep breathing. I mean, you know.
Right, that's just normal human behavior.
Whatever, you know, stuff happens. But no, I looked. That's always, I will hold my breath. Okay, how right. Do you think that's going to go? I'll show you. Okay, let's see it. And they do. And then, you know, if they really succeed, they just pass out and then start breathing. You know, like it's right. A self-correcting problem. Like you're not, oh God, you really got me. You managed to fall asleep. Look at that. Well done. You know, you got to know as a parent when to call a bluff, you know, even if it's not a bluff, and because you got to know that even if they follow through, it's not a problem. Okay. So I looked it up, this purple crying thing.
Right.
Okay. I want to be supportive of things where we're trying to teach people stuff. Purple crying. Purple is an acronym. Immediately misleading.
For sure.
Because when I'm thinking about infants in purple, I'm thinking face color that or bruises or something, right?
Exactly.
Purple means it's a term used to describe a normal phase of increased crying in infants during their first few years of life. P is for peak of crying, 6 to 8 weeks of age. U is for unexpected. They can come and go crying with for no reason. R is it resists soothing that, you know, you try to be nice to them and nothing works. You know, nothing works. L is loud because it... Wait, there's no second P. This is AI, must be misleading. It can't be that there's no second P because it's Pearl right now. I got the AI answer from Google and it's, okay, pain-like face is the P. Long lasting, it goes on for days and, or for hours and hours and your baby may cry more in the late afternoon and evening. Just, kids are going to do dumb stuff and cry a lot. That's all. All right, David, I gave you no time for news. I'm sorry, man. You got anything that you can fit in 10 seconds?
Well, Tulsi Gabbard and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will have committee votes today, so we'll see how that goes.
Sounds like there's going to be a lot of purple crying.
Local news every hour.